Hello and welcome to the Brotherhood Without Manners podcast with me, your host, on this spiritual journey for another week, Ryan McBride. Another month, actually, at this point. We've been fairly slack on the uptake here. I was supposed to actually have this up last week, but the weather was too good, and to be honest, as much as I enjoy making wonderful content for all you one or two listeners out there, I like the sun a bit better, and it's all too rare here in Ireland where I'm recording from. Now, this time around on the Brotherhood Without Manners podcast, we have a few developments. We have a lot of developments, actually, when it comes to the Land of Ice and Fire universe. HBO have recently signed on a new show, or announced what the show will be about. We already knew they signed on this new show like a year ago. Also, there's some action going on in Belfast filming. There is some action going on and George Martin's blog, which he said he was giving up, which he hasn't given up, and his books still aren't here, and there's another bit of news on that too, but we'll get to that later. Anyway, if you want to tell us anything about this podcast while I'm speaking, if you want to send me some messages, if you hear something that's incorrect, simply not right, you can find us on Facebook, Brotherhood Without Manners. Find us on Twitter at Brotherhood Pod. Get us on Tumblr as well, and Instagram and all the rest of it. We're wherever there's a social media, you will find us hanging on there somewhere. And in case you're wondering why this sounds so clear and concise or terribly recorded, I'm now recording off my brand new wonderful mic arm, complete with springs that sound like shitty guitars, and I'm now far away from my sound desk, so I can't actually adjust the volume, so you're gonna have to settle with this level because I'm not changing it for anything. All right, during the week I put out a survey of what random topic basically you wanted me to talk about this week, and it was between either the real life Crinogmen or how ancient Japanese had a solution that we can use now for gun control. And it was a tie. There was one vote on Facebook for samurai, 3 on Instagram for Crinogmen, and 2 on Twitter for samurai. So just to be fair, I'm gonna try and do both. And if you're not happy, if it's not as comprehensive as you want it to be, then I can do it again, or you can just settle and do your own fucking podcast. Only joking. Thank you for listening. Anyway, I'm going to start off with Crannogs anyway. And in Game of Thrones, the Crannogmen are like, the Crannogmen are these people that live in, the Neck. Like, they live in this little, they live in this boggy area in the Neck, and you know them. They're like Jojen Reed, the Reeds, basically, all of these people who are somewhat magical, somewhat intertwined with the children of the forest, and they can be found in the swamps there, and basically their houses can move, their lands move, they're kind of elusive, not hard to find, I guess. If you really tried, I guess you could find them if you were, you know, King Westeros or something like that. But basically what it says on the Wikipedia is that the Crannogmen are reclusive people who dwell in the swamps of the Neck. They are ruled by House Reed from Greywater Watch. Their current lord is Howland Reed. And then, anyway, it says culture. The Crannogmen are so-called for their habit of living in small villages formed of reeds and thatch that sit atop floating islands in the mire. They are a poor people that seldom leave their land, subsisting on fishing and frogging. Some claim that the Crannogmen's smaller size is because they're intermarried with the children of the forest, while others attribute the size to poor nutrition. Now, this has direct comparisons in real life with George Martin didn't really go away too far from the source on this, from people who built Crannogs. And Crannogs, if you don't know, were an ancient fortified dwelling constructed in a lake or a marsh in either Scotland or Ireland. And basically it's more or less a more permanent version of what George Martin's going for in the book there. I mean, basically, it's these artificial mud islands that the ancient Stone Age Irish, and even before that, Scottish made in the middle of lakes or rivers if they didn't move too fast. So the word comes from Old Irish, and it means, well, not even Old Irish, it's just Irish as it is, and cran means tree and og means young, so young tree. And according to Patrick Deneen, one of the additional meanings, which is actually quite interesting in a Game of Thrones context, is crow's nest, which, you know, when you consider all of the magical extras that come with the Crannog men in the Song of Ice and Fire, it's a nice little parallel that he tied in there. Another meaning of Crannog is pulpit, which is like a platform in a church where priests would give their sermon, like a podium or something. And that's kind of it's another like interesting side definition for Game of Thrones, because of the religious old gods, I don't know, connection there. Now, the Crannogs in real life, they were built in lake for defense, and they were able to pull, on occasion sometimes, the road back in, and other times they just have a little line of stones into the middle to get their cows and stuff in. That's why primarily they had these. Because in Ireland, like, basically all trade was done with cattle, and even the roads in Irish, they're called bohors, and bo means cow, so literally, you know, it's everything is based around the cow. But anyway, the earliest known Crannog is Éilean Donal in the Outer Hebrides in Scotland. That was radiocarbon dated to 3650 to 2500 BC. Now that is really old. That's older than the pyramids, I do believe, in Egypt. You know, I'm ready. I'm hoping to correct you on that. Correct me at Brotherhood Pod if I'm wrong. And the earliest known Crannogs in Ireland were much later, actually. The earliest one in Ireland is in Ballanderry, in County Derry, Londonderry, whatever your preference is, at 1200 to 600 BC. And weird enough, that is probably near enough to where Game of Thrones is being filmed at the moment. And I wonder, are they going to use that as some of the set? I don't know. We need to ask Irish Thrones about that. But anyway, some history for you. Crannog construction and occupation was at its peak in Scotland from about 800 BC to AD 200. So, around the time of the Romans, I guess. When they were kind of stretching their limbs. Not surprisingly, Crannogs have useful defensive properties, although there seems to be more significance to the prehistoric use than simple defense, because very few weapons or evidence of destruction appear in excavations of these prehistoric Crannogs. In Ireland, the Crannogs were at their zenith a bit later, when they were the homes and retreats of kings, lords, prosperous farmers, and occasionally socially marginalized groups such as monastic hermits or metalsmiths who could work in isolation. So you can imagine, if you want to get away from the world, if you're being raided by Vikings, you want to be somewhere where you can leave all your shit, you can work away in peace and without fear of being, you know, stolen away, raped, or, you know, your animals being killed and all your stuff being robbed or sold into slavery. So it makes sense in that regard. Larger Crannogs could be occupied by extended families or communal groups, and access was either by longboats or coracles, while evidence for timber or stone causeways exists on a large number of Crannogs as well. They were in use from the late Bronze Age to the pre-industrial era, a span of some 3,000 years. Now that is a long time, like just pre-industrial era. They sprung up, and usually in places where there are other evidences of an ancient community around. So there was usually a community around, and if you know, someone came to threaten the village or something like that, you'd be able to hide in Crannog and stuff like that as well. But that's, again, just a side purpose for the Crannogs. Depending on the local resources or requirements, the planned lake dwelling could range from 4 or 5 meters in diameter to over 35. Now, that's a lot of work, because considering you have to, like, the interior area was filled with, you know, alternate layers of rock, peat, and broken brushwood, the order of stratification changing from site to site. It's likely that heavy stones and human feet were used to tamp down the layers laboriously, hopefully removing dangerous voids or cavities which could collapse the interior of the structure. So you want a good foundation there, and you also want to drive out all of the pooled water and just stop it from washing away. So, you know, this takes months of toiling, and eventually the artificial mound would rise from the middle of the lake. The height was determined usually by the builders, so it could depend. When the platform was, you know, when they eventually said, you know, this platform's high enough, the top would be leveled off and finished with like a mixture of compacted soil, sand, and pebbles to provide a solid surface and, you know, some degree of drainage, because you got to have some drainage whenever you got a lake around you. Yeah, the house they built on the Crown Oaks, they're kind of similar to beehive huts that they would find in monasteries in Ireland dated from around the same time. Like, I mean, like, and this is obviously falling on deaf ears for a lot of you, but if any of you have seen Star Wars The Force Awakens, that's where Luke Skywalker was hiding. And it was the place, like, it was this little beehive huts like that. And the place it was located was off the coast of Kerry in Ireland, which, you know, these people were also off on a little island off the coast of Ireland as well. So they kind of had a similar frame of mind, I think. Yeah, the last hurrah of the Crown Oaks took place from the 15th to the 17th centuries, so the 1600s, that's like Age of Exploration times. This is like Renaissance times. People were still living in Crown Oaks. But yeah, eventually at this time they were used as like offshoots, providing Native Irish with moated residences, fortresses, treasuries, depots for weapons, prisons, and hospitals. And at the time as well, this is like, there was a thing called the Flight of the Earls, where two Gaelic Irish chiefs left to try and get extra forces from abroad, but failed and died abroad. And Ulster Plantation happened, and the British started invading. But anyway, thanks to Anne Sheena Fionn for that. They're a magazine that cover a lot of Irish stuff, and that's really interesting. I might leave the samurai stuff for next week. I'm not really sure if I have enough time to cover it properly, because it's an important issue. You know what? Fine, I will do it. I mean, I don't like to go into news and non-Game of Thrones stuff here, but since the last episode of Game of Thrones, Brotherhood of the Manners, in the end of April, Donald Trump made some really weird finger-pointing gestures towards London and England and their hospitals there, saying that they get a little stabby a little too often, and it's like, I don't remember the last stabbing spree in London, because knife attackers can't open fire into a crowd, and you don't need a gun or even a knife to kill them. You can just, there are ways of stopping a knife attacker without resorting to that sort of, you know, shooting them, or extremes that make you kind of on the same power as them. And it's not really a race to the bottom in that sort of way. Plus, the Met have guns, as far as I know, or some of them definitely do, detectives probably do, and they all maybe probably have tasers. I don't know, I'm open to correction here, but if any of you live in London, I'm open to be corrected. But anyway, I'm yammering on about this. I was out cycling during the weekend, and just, you know, when I'm out cycling, I tend to think a bit too much, and this time I thought, you know, but one of this, all of this, you know, news is going through my head, and I thought samurais had access to so many deadly weapons, like the samurai swords are still considered to be one of the most dangerous weapons, definitely like melee weapons of all. And I guess samurais had a very holistic approach to using weapons. And to fighting, to learning how to fight. You weren't just learning how to fight. You didn't just hop down to your local samurai sword store and pick up your latest slicey dicey 1000. I mean, there was a lot more to it, and even now there is a lot more to it. I mean, I studied jiu-jitsu for about 4 years, and it takes a lot of its roots from, like, I did traditional Japanese jiu-jitsu, and it takes pride that it has a lot of its roots in this samurai culture. I mean, a lot of them would have been farmers, a lot of them would have been laborers, and eventually it's like being a knight in British culture, or not British culture, feudal culture. But anyway, samurais, yeah, it's a more holistic approach, because you weren't just a knight, you weren't just a fighter, you weren't just someone who can handle themselves in the field of battle. You had to be leveled, you had to be balanced, you had to be disciplined, you had to know when forces needed to be applied. You knew that you weren't to attack first, you only attack in retaliation. And this is driven into you, in jiu-jitsu, this is driven into you. It's called the gentle art. I mean, it's like, literally, jiu-jitsu translated means the gentle art. And a lot of the problems with guns in America is that it's far too easy to get them, and people who aren't ready to use them have them. And I don't know, it's like you wouldn't let someone get into a car if they don't know how to drive it, you know? Maybe you wouldn't let someone be a pharmacist if you knew they were addicted to heroin, you know? Or addicted to opiates, addicted to morphine, or something like that. Because, you know, you can't rely on them. It's a big grey area there, alright, but just a preemptive thing. Regulations. Regulations work in literally every other industry, every other thing that you purchase. They're there for a reason. For safety. Why does it need to stop at guns? Are you planning on, you know, starting a little militia every now and again? No? I can't remember the last armed uprising in America. When was it? Texas, probably? I don't know. Anyway. On to Game of Thrones. The subject, the topic of this podcast. Believe it or not. George R.R. Martin released the cover of his book. It's called Fire and Blood, and it's bitchin'. I'll share it up on our social platforms after this podcast goes up. And on May the 1st, there was indeed a May Day. George Martin says he's resisting splitting Winds of Winter 2, the next A Song of Ice and Fire installment, into two separate books. George Martin, you're an absolute troll. Why would you do this to us? Although it would maybe mean that we would get the first half of the book a little earlier. And also you can't fuck about with the earlier parts of the book, like change chapters, move them about. Like, he's kind of confirming that he has the first half done, but also he's confirming he hasn't a fucking clue what he's doing in the second half. So that's a bit worrying. But also maybe you can pick out some optimism from that. I don't know. Massive news that is coming out during the week, last week maybe. HBO has officially greenlit a pilot episode for a prequel series from showrunner Jane Goldman, and she was behind X-Men First Class, Kingsman, The Secret Service as well. I'm really looking forward to this, actually. It takes place thousands of years before the events of Game of Thrones. This is the official, you know, description from HBO. The series chronicles the world's descent from the golden age of heroes into its darkest hour. And only one thing is for sure. From the horrifying secrets of Westeros history, to the true origin of the White Walkers, the mysteries of the East, to the Starks of legend, it's not the story we think we know. I don't know what that means. I don't know why they're being so ominous. I just presume, you know, all this stuff. We won't get all the answers at the end of Game of Thrones. Which, that's a little frustrating, but, you know, as long as they tie up the story nicely, that's fine. I don't need all the answers right now. But anyway, George Martin signed off on it. He's the executive producer now. And he gave a suggestion for what he thinks the name of the series should be. He said, "My vote would be The Long Night," which says it all. "But I'd be surprised if that's where we end up," he wrote on his blog. More likely, HBO will want to work the phrase Game of Thrones in there somewhere. And to be honest, George Martin's probably right. He knows the industry inside out now at this point with HBO. But if it's HBO, Game of Thrones presents Long Night, probably. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, yeah. If Jane Goldman, like getting someone from a superhero franchise and someone from Kingsman, which is kind of a lighthearted, lighthearted action movie. It's interesting that they picked her to get it, but I guess this now's her chance to prove herself. And again, it's only a pilot episode. It's not a series that's confirmed. It's just a pilot for the series. So we'll see how that goes, if it's going to be successful, or if it's going to be another utter failure, like Game of Thrones' original pilot episode, which I still haven't seen, which probably not many people have. It's probably just a handful. But anyways, what do you think the name of the new series should be about The Long Night and the prequel, or, you know, the preceding Long Night that will reveal the history of the old Starks and stuff like that? Let us know. Tweet us at Brotherhood Pod and all the rest of it, you know. Anyway, now it's time for your real news as fake news. Boring but efficient leader of the fun gang, Jon Snow, recently attended a summit with disinterested Cersei ready to trump his every move. She left without any assurances. However, he said,
"There is only one war that matters. The Great War. And it is here."
Shortly before everything untangled this badly, Cersei's close aide, Maester Pycelle, said focusing on the northern border issue was ridiculous and compared it to the tail wagging the dog.
Firms that actually use that border regularly. It's just beyond belief that we're allowing this tail wagging in this way. And allowing the whole of our agenda to be shaped by this government. So, look, I'm not going to hide, I've said it before, I'm not going to hide it from you. There is an argument going on.
And in such a time of chaos, there's nothing like a royal wedding to calm the nerves. It's the wife's second time out, and hoping for a marked difference this time. And the fresh prince is waiting oh so keenly to give away his flower. Best avoid the queen, though. She ain't too happy. Okay. And that's your news. Hope you enjoyed it. It's a bit weird this week. I went American this time, but I'm sure you've noticed already. Yeah, cast news. This isn't really cast news, really, because they're not really in the cast. Where are they? Mark Addy and Jason Momoa. Mark Addy being, you know, King Robert Baratheon, and Jason Momoa being Khal Drogo. They were spotted in a rap party for season 8 with the rest of the cast. Are they going to do flashbacks? Or is that what they're going to do? I don't know. But anyway, Momoa said he was only there for the kisses, the hugs, and the black stuff, meaning Guinness. Maybe it means something else, I don't know. But anyway, let's presume that they're there on a social call. But if they were there, it'd be interesting to see what of King Robert they would show. I don't think they would show much of Khal Drogo's past and Bran flashback, but I think they would show a lot of King Robert if they had the chance, if the actor was up for it. Yeah. Yeah, anyway. And yeah, I think Irish Thrones caught one of the sets being taken down just in the last few days. Does that mean they're finished filming a lot of it? Does that mean the rest of the year and a half is going to be post-production for a lot of the scenes in that part? It looked like, to me, it looked like King's Landing. What do you think? Is that worrying? Do you want more action? How many months of filming does it take to make 7 movies? Anyway, we'll see how it goes. You can keep up to date with us on Instagram, Brotherhood About Manners, where I post memes daily. Not so daily as I used to, but still occasionally. If you want to ask us a question and a sound file, actually, you can send it to us at bannersmanners@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brotherhood Pod. And we're on Facebook too if you want to bop us on a question for your thoughts on the episode. Yeah, and if you are listening to this on your iPhone, or if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, give us a nice juicy 5-star review. Yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. Good night.